This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome to the March 27, 2015 podcast. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I will be reading summaries of four articles on the following topics: vascular disorders, functional neurosurgery, stereotactic radiosurgery, pain, and hydrocephalus. Plaque morphology, or the PLAC scale, on CT angiography, predicting long-term anatomical success of primary carotid stenting, by David Peltz and colleagues.
Carotid stenting for atherosclerotic stenosis is typically performed with the use of pre- and post-stent balloon angioplasty and embolic protection devices. Each one of these devices can generate distal emboli and cause procedure-related stroke.
Our group and others have shown that the procedure can be done effectively using self-expanding stents alone, an approach we call primary carotid stenting. This technique is faster, cheaper, and potentially safer than traditional techniques.
Satisfactory anatomic results with this technique may depend on the pre-procedural appearance of the carotid plaque on CT angiography. Heavily calcified plaques may be less likely to dilate compared to other types of plaque.
We describe our results using the pre-procedural plaque scale. This scale quantitates the amount of plaque calcification as well as the amount of non-calcified or soft plaque using a simple A or B grading scale for soft plaque and a 0 through 4 grading scale for plaque calcification.
For example, an A1 plaque on CTA has a moderate amount of soft plaque, the A in the scale, and only minimal plaque calcification, the 1 in the scale. This lesion would likely be suitable for primary carotid stenting. Conversely, a B4 plaque on CTA has little or no soft plaque, the B in the scale, and exuberant, fully circumferential plaque calcification, 4 in the scale. Plaques like this would likely not allow stent expansion over time.
The plaque scale can therefore help to determine whether embolic protection devices and balloon angioplasty are required, and whether endarterectomy, rather than stenting, should be considered as a treatment option.
A successful use of multiple stereotactic radiosurgeries for ipsilateral recurrent trigeminal neuralgia, by Emily Doherty and colleagues. The authors present a case report of multiply recurrent trigeminal neuralgia treated with a third course of radiosurgery, resulting in pain control without additional toxicity. A 38-year-old man, without pertinent medical or neurological history, had presented 14 years earlier with classic trigeminal neuralgia. After medical management of 16 months had failed, the patient underwent balloon decompression. 15 months later, he underwent his first gamma knife procedure for refractory symptoms, receiving 80 gray to the proximal trigeminal nerve. Despite an initial 5-month response, the pain recurred, and in fact was more severe. A second course of gamma knife radiosurgery was performed, with 70 gray targeted again to the proximal trigeminal nerve. After a pain-free interval of 9 years, the pain returned, and the patient opted to undergo a third course of gamma knife radiosurgery. He received 70 gray of radiation, with the target placed at the anterior portion of the right trigeminal nerve root. At the 3-year follow-up, the patient was pain-free without medications, with only minor decreased sensation to light touch along the first distribution of the trigeminal nerve. This case represents one of only 2 reports with detailed information on the treatments and outcomes in patients receiving 3 courses of stereotactic radiosurgery for trigeminal neuralgia, and the only instance of continued sustained pain relief. Stereotactic Radiosurgery for Intracranial Hemangioblastomas, a retrospective international outcome study by Hideyuki Kano and co-authors. Six participating centers of the North American Gamma Knife Consortium and 13 Japanese Gamma Knife centers identified 186 patients with 517 hemangioblastomas who underwent SRS. 80 patients had 335 hemangioblastomas associated with von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL. 106 patients had 182 sporadic hemangioblastomas. The median tumor volume was 0.2 centimeters cubed in VHL patients and 0.7 centimeters cubed in those with sporadic hemangioblastoma. The median margin dose was 18 gray in the VHL group and 15 gray in the sporadic hemangioblastoma group. At a median of 5 years, 20 patients had died from intracranial disease progression and 9 patients had died from other causes. The overall survival was 94% at 3 years, 90% at 5 years, and 74% at 10 years. Factors associated with longer survival included younger age, no neurological symptoms, fewer tumors, and higher Karnofsky performance status. The local control rate for treated tumors was 92% at 3 years, 89% at 5 years, and 79% at 10 years. Factors associated with improved local control included VHL-associated hemangioblastoma, solid tumor, smaller tumor volume, and higher margin dose. Adverse radiation effects developed in 6% of cases. Combined rigid and flexible endoscopy for tumors in the posterior third ventricle by Jonathan Roth and Shlomi Constantini. Tumors leading to occlusion of the Sylvian aqueduct include those of the pineal, thalamic, and tectal origins. These tumors cause obstructive hydrocephalus and thus necessitate a cerebrospinal fluid diversion procedure, such as an endoscopic third ventriculostomy, which is often coupled with an endoscopic biopsy. Lesions located posterior to the massa intermedia pose a technical challenge, as the use of a rigid endoscope for performing both an endoscopic third ventriculostomy and endoscopic biopsy is limited. The authors describe their experience using a combined rigid and flexible endoscopic procedure through a single burr hole for both procedures in patients with posterior third ventricular tumors. This technique overcomes the limitations of using only a rigid endoscope, reaching two distant regions. Thank you for listening. Follow the JNS on Twitter at #TheJNS and please like us on Facebook at Journal of Neurosurgery Publishing Group. Comments on this podcast can be sent to jnspodcast@thejns.org.